down to Ronaldo. Yes! Yes! David Beckham has done it big time.
Seva, welcome.
Cheers, hello.
Good episode with Zach Anderson last week on a good friend of yours. And he came across really well and gave us a really good insight into his football career.
Yeah, Zach's a good boy. He's an awesome talker. And we had a lot of fan mail from a lot of women out there.
He's a very good looking human, isn't he?
He goes
no wonder
right.
You let him stay with you.
No, he goes all right, Zach. He's a good boy. He's a good boy.
Now, today's in-studio guest is current coach, head coach at Marconi, Peter Sakanis. Seka, welcome.
G'day, guys. How are you?
How you going, Sek?
Yeah, good.
Good. How's it been at Marconi this year, pal?
Yeah, it's been reasonably good. Our performance has been pretty good, but we've been leading games and letting leads slip, and we've had four draws, a loss, and a win. It keeps us in touch, but we know we're better than that, so we'll just keep improving the little things, and we'll be right.
Yeah, sweet. Now we've got Seka on to take us right back to his NSL days, and we're going to get on to his coaching career and playing for Australia and all that. So we can't wait for this tonight, eh, Seva?
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. We've been waiting a while for this.
And so. He also coached you, yeah, and you played with him.
Coached me, played with him, and won a few things together.
Now, I'm going to get to...
I used to have hair, now I don't.
Yeah. I can tell why. Seka's got a story about that too, Seva, so we're going to save that, right, until we get on to Bankstown. Now, Seka, take us back to where it all started for you, growing up as a kid and then obviously getting to St George back in the day, and tell us how you got there, mate.
Yeah, look, I played for a local club in Gladsville when I was 5 years old. I was walking down to the pitch with my dad, and there was some kids playing soccer. My dad said, "You want to play?" And I had sandals on. So, those old-fashioned sandals. And that was my first session with sandals on. And that was sort of the start of my football as a young kid, 5 years old. Played a few years there and ended up at St George Olympic, some other local clubs where I lived. And then St George Budapest, which is, yep, Frank Arok's baby back then. Started playing there from, say, around 14, 15, and then progressed into Frank's apprenticeship scheme that he had there and played first-team football just before they folded, and then I moved on from there. But, St George had played a big part in my youth career, definitely.
Yeah, and you debuted at a young age there, didn't you?
17, yeah.
Yeah. And how was that coming up against, I guess, grown men at the time when football was probably at its toughest, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, looking back on it, it was sort of a dream come true. I never really had the aspirations to play. I didn't even think ahead. I was just enjoying the moment and playing football. And I enjoyed it, and I improved, and I was good at it at the time, and things just progressed without thinking. Where I think these days people have too much expectation, and that's where they falter, because things aren't happening in a timely manner.
Yep.
I think mine just progressed, and before you know it, I was playing against South Melbourne for St George coming on. We won that game, I remember fondly, and just once you play first team football, then you get noticed, and things happen from there.
Yeah. Back then the league was crazy. I mean, I was a Marconi ball boy growing up. It was probably a little bit after that. But I remember the size of the players back then, they were just completely different, eh? Different body shape to what they are now.
Yeah, definitely. And as a kid going into there, I mean, you had to have some physical presence because they tested you. And I remember, not only St George's a little bit different because I was a young kid and I was protected by Frank, but when I went to Olympic the year after, I mean, I had guys like, Andy Burnell and guys like that that would kick me to,
At training.
Kick me. And yeah. I dusted myself and got up. And I think you earn the respect from those players. And once you earn that respect, then you're set. But if you don't react in the right way, then it'll be tough for you.
And take us into that Sydney Olympic dressing room then. And as you said, you just mentioned Andy Burnell. Mm. And for a young kid, I guess, for yourself, how was that?
Yeah, it was daunting because it's a Greek kid that followed this club for years. His dad took him to the games. I remember going to Pratton Park when there was riots and all that sort of stuff, the big games. And all of a sudden you're rubbing shoulder with Gary Meyer, who's played for many years, and all of a sudden he's my teammate. Yeah. So, from a young kid watching and then all of a sudden your teammate, it's goosebump stuff. So it was an honour to sort of get there. But again, it was one of those things. There was no expectation. There was it just things progressed. And I thoroughly enjoyed my initial part of being part of that team, it was tough. It wasn't easy. I didn't get into the team straight away. There was many obstacles, many times that, you know, you weren't playing and you're playing in the youth team and you had to fight your way through. And, you know, it was, I think it was the survival of the fittest or the toughest back then.
Yeah. And you talk about that too, right?
Yeah, definitely. But it's even in his personality of, like, letting things take their course and let it be. Like you said, if you put too much expectation and stuff, like, you start growing impatient, you start making moves and decisions and phone calls that can bite you in the ass later on. So, yeah, and you'd know all about that because you've been through it all, you know?
Yeah. And I'm a father now, and I sort of, you know, with a kid that we'll probably talk about later, but that I can share that. It's not about the football for me. In football, you've got talent. You've got a lot of talented players and a lot, and you know yourself, Seba, a lot of talented players, probably better than we were as kids, never made it because they just didn't have that hunger or that resilience to go that next level.
I've said on this before, and I said it to Thwaitie, you can tell who are wired differently. Some of them are proper wired differently,
straight away.
They're just mentally on and they're gonna, and they know they're going
to
make it.
Yeah, or it's not that they know. It's that they refuse to for another answer.
Give up.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's easy to say, I'm going to make it, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I mean, I say I'm going to go to the gym every day, but I don't. But I know,
deep
down inside, I know that's not real. That's just talk.
Yeah, but
it's just set in your brain. It's not about discussing it. It's about, it just happens because it's in you.
Yeah, yeah. And and then you head up the up north to Newcastle.
Yeah, so I was Olympic for 9 years. And there was some interest from Newcastle at the time. And things weren't going well for me at the time at Olympic with certain coaching staff and whatnot. So I thought it was a good change for me. I did have a property up the coast, which I could sort of utilise, but I was sort of commuting up and down initially, but then settled in. I was there for 4 years under Ian Crook. And, well, originally it was... what's his name?
Because Crook was the second. Then
no,
took
what
over,
was the
he?
Other one? You know him. It was at Marconi.
Schaefer.
No.
Lee Sterry. That's right. Yeah.
Lee Sterry.
Yeah.
Lee Sterry. Dragged me. So it was Newcastle Breakers.
Yep.
And then I didn't get the chance to play for him because that's when it changed. So I got taken up there, and the whole thing changed to Newcastle United.
Okay.
And Con Constantine took over at the time. So. Played there with Lee, and then the 3 years after that, Ian Crook was the coach with Gary Van Egmond as the assistant. And I had three really good years. The last year that of the National League, I got Player of the Year for Newcastle.
Yep.
So I had an enjoyable year, and I still got mates up there, and it was, they treated me well up there, and it was a good time of my career.
You guys had a quality team up there. You had a lot of good players. I think Andy Harper was playing.
Yeah, Andy Harper, Bonavoglia. The list goes on.
Even
the local boys, you know, some of the local boys like Andy Roberts and
was Rob
Mark
Middleby?
Wilson.
Rob
Middleby.
Yeah.
He was there at one point. Like even Deansy's still there.
Yeah.
He's part of the
Stevie
furniture.
Eagleton.
Yeah.
Was Joel Griffiths there at the time?
Joel Griffiths, Adam Griffiths, Ryan Griffiths, whole lot of them. But,
the mum, dad, everyone, they're all there.
Yeah, they're all there. Bill Trame, the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had, and look, we they still have old boys get together.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, at the games, they invite all the boys back and they look after us and, we enjoy getting together.
That was a good stadium to play at, wasn't it, when it was
brilliant.
Packed? It was so hard to go there and win.
We used to have good crowds, especially when you're winning, and we were. You know, I remember 13,000, 14,000, no problem against anyone.
Yeah, right. We went there once for Marconi when Krencevich was there. Like, with Arkan. 2-0 we were down. I don't know if you remember the game you were playing. I think 1 or 2-0 in 5-10 minutes. We're like, far out, man. Unbelievable. Once they got momentum, you couldn't beat it.
Yeah, we were tough up there,
tough.
Definitely. And know the UGA.
Yeah, that's him. It's got to be.
It was awesome.
That's how it's got to be. And then Bankstown as a player first. And
so obviously the National League sort of had a halt.
Evaporated.
And then I think obviously the NPL became the place to play if you wanted to sort of keep ticking over. And a lot of players like Sash Petrovsky and I can name them all. They all came down and played at that level. So that was a pretty high level competition.
Pretty high standard.
Yeah. I went as a player to Bankstown. It's close to home.
Why Bankstown, Pete? I never asked.
Well, look, I'll be honest. Bonnyrigg sort of made a play but never eventuated. Okay. And I wasn't sure what I was going to do. Bankstown came along and had a chat with them, and, you know, there was a great bunch of guys there, and I thought, you know what, this is good. I'll keep me ticking over to see what would happen. And that's was the decision. Plus they paid me well. So and that back then they were paying very well at the time for you know decent players, because they
wanted to have a crack. Games.
Yeah,
yeah.
Every club in that Premier League back then, or what was it called, wasn't called the Premier League.
No, was it? I can't remember what it was.
But they all had like five or six players that were already had deals high with the A-League.
High profile, yeah.
So they'll pay them massive money to keep these players in five,
so they weren't
weeks.
Going up to the A-League at the time.
No, because pre-seasons was...
It wasn't planned. So it wasn't next season. It was beyond that.
Right.
And no one really knew. So players wanted to keep ticking over, earning an income. Right? These players wanted to earn an income. And these clubs had egos and wanted to win. And the crowds came. Because it was like it was massive good, crowds.
Yeah, we got those stories from Sever and Flea about Bankstown. Now let's run into that.
Yeah.
You obviously then play a coach there.
Yeah. So after about three, four games.
Yeah.
The coach Andy Papoulis at the time had to go back to Cyprus for some reason, family reasons, personal reasons, and Louis Postolovsky, who's still a friend of mine, who was on the board at the time, he pulled me aside at a restaurant function thingy was happening. I think they cornered me and they said, look, we're losing our coach, we want you to be the coach. And he goes, well done, congratulations, without even me saying yes. So I didn't even have time to think.
Double wage.
I didn't even have time to think. So I said, look, it's something that I want to do. I wasn't sure if it was the right time. Again, progression, right?
Timing.
I never even sat to think, I want to coach, how I'm going to get there.
Oh, you weren't just ready to even, weren't exercising the idea.
Not at the time. I knew I wanted to.
Yeah.
Like, does that make sense? So I knew that I would be.
At some point.
It was in me.
But was early.
But it wasn't me planning on it. Like, sometimes you have a plan, right?
Yeah.
This wasn't a plan yet, because I was still a player. I still felt like I was playing, maybe National League, A-League, whatever it was. So that was sort of sprung on me. I thought, you know what? Why not? Right?
Yeah.
The boys were good. It was going to be difficult. I knew it was going to be difficult from being a teammate to being a coach.
Yeah.
That was going to be a challenge. And it all happened very quickly. But then I took it on.
You found the best second you could possibly find, eh?
The best
second.
Second assistant. Assistant? Yeah. So I can. Yeah.
Your right hand man.
I think Pete explained that to you. But yeah, so I was thrown into it, and I'll give you the story. So the first game, we played St George and we won 1-0, and it was so mentally exhausting for me, being a player and a coach in the first game of that sort of career type. And I was off my feet, like exhausted, because I was thinking not only for myself.
Yeah.
The whole thing, right? And the pressure of, you know, being at this club with high expectations.
And the crowds were massive too.
The crowds were, you know, a few thousand people at Jensen every game at least. So there was that expectation, but the expectation on myself as well, because I'm pretty hard on myself. And I was exhausted. Second game we lost, we were winning 1-0 up at the Central Coast, and Buddy Farrell scored the first one. And then we lost like 6-1.
Wow.
Second game. And you can imagine now.
I heard about that.
Now there was some senior players in the change room having some punch-ons and whatnot, and I won't name the players.
You still had the A-League players that were about to go.
I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, oh, what have I done here, right? And you know, as you know, the board's probably thinking, have we made the right decision?
Yeah.
I'm thinking, have I done the right thing? How do I handle this? Right? I'm a senior player. I was a skipper. I was a captain. So I sort of had that skill. I settled it down, and then the following week, I think it was, when I think you came to training.
Yeah.
And then I was speaking to Flea in the meantime. He was having problems. And my assistant, George Athanasis, was my assistant, said, look, I can't do this anymore. I've got to sort of head off for work. What about Flea? He's having issues. Spoke to Flea. It didn't take long. He had some stuff going on there. And before you knew it, he was with me. And to be honest, since then we clicked straight away, and really haven't sort of looked back from there in terms of how we operate and working together and the chemistry we have and how it all works.
I think Flea and I, we rocked up the same night.
Same night.
I think so, yeah.
And Flea takes us back to that. So we got Flea's point of view. Now we'll get the head coach's point of view. Yep. They Flea talked about training. Seva talks about training. It was just different at that time.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. And this is the stuff that I'll sort of discuss at Marconi at the moment, which it's a different era. It's a different mindset, but you can still train and work hard in terms of how you train.
Yep.
So back then, obviously, our sessions and the World Mini World Cups, you probably heard. Infamous World Cup. There was no hold bars. And don't forget, I still was playing.
Yeah.
Right?
And so were you kickable?
I was kickable, but I gave back.
You don't want to be caught in a tackle with you, mate.
Yeah, so I kept people honest. But it was easier to do it because I was on there.
Yeah, yeah.
On the sideline now, it's like...
You want to kick it?
Yeah, I want to kick someone, right? But it was easier then because I could go in and physically...
You could make a difference.
Lead from the front.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Show them how it's done, right? Because I could at the time. So they were definitely very competitive and everyone wanted to win. And I had winners in the team.
Yeah, and I'll ask the question, how was it being a player coach? So how did you pull yourself apart on the field as a player and as a coach? Was there just that much trust in Flea on the sideline and you were able to let the team, the coaching go when he turned up?
Look, I think the coaching's done during the week.
Yeah.
I think coaching's also done at halftime, and coaching's done... It was easier for me to coach on the park because I was a leader already. I was a captain already in terms of my stature as a player before I got there. So I could lead around from the park. I felt like so much easier I could do that. And sometimes I find myself on the sideline kicking every ball, being part of the whole action. I think I coach better when I'm doing that on the sideline because I feel like I'm part of the game instead of just sitting there and watching and making calls. So I still have that sort of element still in my game. But I found it pretty easy. And me and Flea were on the same wavelength in terms of we had the plan on, you know, it was easy back then because we had the team was sort of set and we knew who we could do what and if someone got injured, who would do what. And it was, you know, it's very rare that I'd come to the sideline and make a call that was out of what we thought.
Yeah.
And sometimes I would be so worn out, I'll just say, Pete, just make the call.
Cool. Yeah, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And I trusted that he'd make the right one. Look, we didn't get him right all the time, but... You know, if I trust someone to make the call, I'll back him on that call.
Yeah, and you talk about that too, right?
Yeah. I can't remember one that you gone wrong, that you had wrong.
No, we took a lot of punts, but people would look and think...
We won every game of the year from that.
Yeah, we didn't lose.
We didn't lose. All the way to the final.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big moment for you, I guess, as well then, as a coach. You've gone from playing or player coach to winning a title.
Yeah, well, it's important you win every game when you're new because that's when people are looking to see if you're capable, right?
Yep.
And it's sort of sink or swim. So, look, I was fortunate to have a really good side there. You have to manage it.
There would have been some egos in there too, no doubt.
A lot of egos. There was a lot of egos.
I'm kidding.
A lot of egos, but it was a good balance, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they're all winners. And when you're winning, it's easier to manage. It's when you're losing, and this is when you coach, when you're losing and things aren't going well. That's coaching because I've sort of had my ups and downs in the years that I've coached.
We were talking about that earlier because you need the characters to be able to pull certain people together. Because it's hard to bounce back after it.
Correct. And it's easy to lose your change room after a few losses. There's also the politics of what happens in the boardroom on how you handle the boardroom and how you handle things. Look, I just keep it simple. I just know the players I want. When I speak to the board about any job, I tell them what I need, how I want it. No excuses. If you can't deliver that, then I can't give you what I want and you can't hold me accountable. Yeah. Give me what I want, hold me accountable and I've got no problem.
Yeah, if it fails, then it's
on me. But don't tell me to do this, do that and be a puppet because I won't take the job in the first place.
Is that how you got a good relationship now with Marconi now?
Yeah. Well, any club I've been to, when I was at Bankstown, I was there for 6 years.
Yeah.
All right? I'm Greek. They're a Macedonian club.
Historically,
Well, for me, I got no problem with it. Yeah. They obviously didn't have a problem with it.
Yep.
And they saw that I treated the club and where I was at like my own. And they saw I put all the effort in there. They saw that even when I played for the jersey, if you like. Mm. And they appreciated and respected that. And that's all I wanted.
Yep.
Right? If I'm losing and I'm not doing well, I take responsibility. Yeah. I never shirked away from that. But if we did in the years leading into it, they always backed me because they knew I was there for the right reasons. There was no other agendas until a certain point. After 6.5 years, the board changed, and then that changed.
Yeah, and it's a different idea.
And it was time I sort of made a decision that it was time to go because I can't work in that environment.
But that always happens. It probably would happen, like you said before, at Sydney Olympic.
It happened so, at Olympic, yeah, you know, after 2 years.
That's it.
Yeah, exactly. So let's take us, we'll take it there.
Yeah.
Then back to Sydney Olympic as head coach,
Yep, so when that sort of falling apart, George Giannaris, who was heading Sydney Olympic at the time, who's still a mate of mine. Again, all these guys that I've worked with are still good mates of mine and have a lot of
good relationships.
Yeah, I haven't burned any bridges. Obviously, guys that did the wrong thing, I've got no time for, but the guys that were good and were there for the right reasons and we've got still a good relationship. So Sydney Olympic... 2 years into it, George decided to sort of step down. He had a bit of pressure. He was putting all the money in. Without going too far into it, I just saw the writing on the wall. Mm. The new guys coming in had a different view or different path, different agenda. And I just said, Pete, I'm not going to stay here. And I made the conscious decision and he backed me. And we walked. People made rumours up, whatever they wanted to make up, that we're going to go somewhere else, take players, whatever. Didn't happen. I took 4 years off.
4 years, yeah.
And part of that 4 years was obviously spending time with my family because my kids were young and setting up my business and coaching my son at that time in my spare time.
Yeah. So, and then we go straight into Marconi now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Marconi offered me a few times to come over. At different times, it wasn't the right time.
I remember speaking to you about that. You're like, oh, it just doesn't...
Look, I'll be honest. When I went to Olympic, Marconi offered me to go. But I wanted to go to Olympic. I had a settle to score, right? So to settle to settle, right? Score to settle. Because I left there not in the best as a player, not the way I wanted to.
Yep.
I thought, this is my opportunity...
Make amends.
To coach. Look, I supported, I captained, I played, and then I...
And coached. So you ticked all the boxes.
Yeah, I did everything I could. And I won the championship in the first year.
And cups.
We won the minor premiership, grand finalists, did it pretty easy, won cups there. And Bankstown, unfortunately, were relegated the same year.
Right.
So, right, bit of karma.
Bittersweet, yeah.
And they still haven't recovered. And that's the facts, right?
Yeah.
I'm not making up anything. No, that's the facts. And at Olympic, we were very successful, did really well. Then after 2 years there, we discussed that we changed. But Marconi now, they just – I've gone there. I've basically said what I needed. You know, I need my assistant. This is not negotiable. I've knocked back other jobs, half-heartedly gone in and spoken, and they said, no, we can't have your assistant. We've got to do this, we've got to do that. I said, no deal. And Pete was saying – Pete, take the job, even if they don't want me for whatever reason. I said, no.
Yeah.
It's not the deal.
Yeah. Is it that trust with Flea? Like, he's in a backyard. Like, is it...
Well, you need that.
Yeah.
In football, look, in anything, you need guys that have got your back.
Yeah.
Right? And I test people, most of my staff, you know, if they're not trustworthy, or even players are not trustworthy, if anyone tries to undermine... you've got to act on that.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've got to make sure that everyone around you has got the same sort of focus. Not easy. The bigger the club, the bigger the scope.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. But the guys that are there have backed me. Look, we got them relegated. We got them promoted. Right?
Yeah.
We got in there at a tough time. We got in there. It was the right. I thought it was the right challenge for us. And we got them promoted. And because of that, they've obviously saw what we can do, what we're capable of, and they respect it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't stop there because obviously there's expectations and I have expectations as well.
And you say, you still say that you feel for players that haven't been coached by Flea and Seca as a team.
I've said it a few times now. I feel sorry for the players that haven't had the privilege to play underneath you. And it's the honest truth. Anyone who's played under you guys will always walk away and say, I had a time of my life.
Yeah, look, we enjoy training. We make it enjoyable.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty tough. I mean, we have a certain level of expectation and get the best out of people. You know, players have been pissed off, if I can say that, pissed off with us. But in the long term, because the way we do things, it's fair and honest, and sometimes it doesn't go their way, I'm still friends with pretty much all players, even the ones I've let go,
yep.
still have that level of respect. You know, as long as you're honest, and it's, again, it's unfortunately, it's my opinion as the coach, and I'm the one making the call. Sometimes you fall on the wrong side of that, but I still have a pretty good relationship with most people, I think.
In regards to Marconi, obviously you played a lot against Marconi yep. growing up and that. Now yep. that you're in the club, you know the insides, you know the people, you know how, like, just physically the scale of the club, from yep. the backfields and everything.
Yep, yep.
You can now understand why Marconi back in the day in the NSL was the holy grail.
Yep.
Like it would have been it's the it place to still play yep. coach and yep. that. And yep. you understand that.
Yeah,
now,
I came from, you know, me and I'll give you a story. Before we went to Marconi, me, Flea, you know, we used to pretty much do everything.
Yeah.
Right? Couldn't get the staff, budgets, whatever. We did everything. Picking up cones, whatever we need to do
yeah,
to get the job
done.
Right.
Yep.
We rolled up to Marconi. First day there, we sit in the boardroom. There's these about 10, 12 guys sitting around in all the tracksuits. These guys, all right? Me and Flea looking at each other. And then Rob Carniato will start introducing, well, he's the manager, he's the gear steward, yeah. he's the assistant gear steward, he's the assistant gear steward, physio, trainer, masseur, and he just... And I'm looking at Flea, I go, what do we do? So it's different level, right?
Yeah, and it's always been like that.
And now that you're there, no different to Olympic and whatnot, everyone wants to go to the palace and play well and beat you,
yep. yeah.
right? You're spoiled, right? And sometimes when you're spoiled, it can give you a negative effect,
mm.
right? So you when you have everything, there's an expectation, a different level, which I enjoy. It'd be very difficult for me now to coach Marconi and go the other way.
Yeah, okay.
Now that I've sort of started from the bottom, when I say bottom, that's all due respect to all the clubs that are
of course, yeah, we get it.
But gone to that level with everything at your fingertips and they give me no excuse, everything I ask for, and I'm reasonable, right? I'm not
asking for the world.
To be honest, I've cut budgets yeah. Because when I walked in there, I fell off my chair. I said, we shouldn't be paying this. And they're looking at me thinking, that's the first time that's happened, right? Yeah. Because people are happy to spend someone else's money, but yeah. I'm not. Because yeah. I don't think it's right. So they respect that.
A little bit, yeah, a level of respect there yeah. as well from
yeah.
then.
Yeah, yeah, correct.
Yes. I'll ask you then, is it harder to be a player or a coach? Or, and what do you find better now?
Look, there's nothing like playing. Let's get that right. Playing, right?
Yeah.
Playing's the ultimate, especially if you're fortunate enough to play at a high level, play in front of crowds, do all that sort of stuff, travel, do all that, right? Great experience. I think coaching is tougher only because you're not only looking after yourself, you're responsible for everybody.
Mm.
When you lose, it comes down to you. All the results come down to you, the way you play. Whereas a player, yeah, you can hide, you can get away with it. You might get pinned out for performance. But overall, you take that responsibility. Mentally, you take that whole responsibility. It's tougher. Rewarding.
Yep.
When you're doing well, very rewarding. It's very similar to... It's probably just... When you finish playing, it's probably... So you have football in your life. That's sort of the next thing you can do to stay in touch with the game and still be, you know, in that change room, feeling that every kick of the ball.
The change room, mate.
Feeling winning, feeling losing, having that sort of those emotions.
And seeing reactions.
Reactions. Yeah. And now I get satisfaction with these young boys that I've coached. You know, even in my son's team, the 13s, 15s, and the teams that have progressed, and some are still with me, and boys that have gone to the A-League. And for me, helping now players progress and improving and obviously winning games and seeing things improve and, you know, helping clubs better themselves in doing what they're doing and being part of that, it's different, but it's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's harder.
Yeah, I get that 100%. Yeah. Now, you've also played for Australia. Now, green yep. and gold, you know, that's the epitome of what we want to do, right? Yep. And Seba, you remember that vividly?
Yeah.
You've told us.
Yeah, what I wanted to start talking about was the Youth World Cup in 1993.
How old are you, mate?
I was 11.
War boy with Emma. Emma was juggling.
Yeah, was he? Yeah. What I wanted to say was, I think at around about that age, I was at Marconi. I think I went to Marconi at 7 years old, so I understood, like, the club was massive back then, and, you know, to have the tracksuit, like, like what you got on. It meant a lot.
Yeah.
And then, for example, when the U4 Cup came along, and that was the first tournament or anything that we actually got behind. Like, you guys at that age, you were 19.
Yeah, so I'm 20 with World Youth Cup. So, 93, I was turning 20, but I was 19 when the competition.
Right,
so
yeah.
Under-20s, yeah.
So you guys were the rock stars for us. Like, you guys were reachable because there were a lot of players in that team that played
for Marconi. Yep.
All right, and we used to see him all the time in that. And that era, even for our podcast listeners right now, that 40 to 50-year-old or 35 to 40-year-old, that's our major...
Yeah.
That's our biggest fan base, correct?
100%.
Yeah, so... You guys were like the pinnacle, and before I played with you, I never realised exactly what a career you actually had from there to the Olympics. Like that World Cup there was unbelievable. Mm. Like it launched a few good careers, and it was, I think it was the first time that we actually saw football in our country. It was the first major tournament we pretty much held, eh?
Yeah, from memory, yeah. For football wise, it was up there, definitely.
Yeah, and it was a beacon of, like, for example, like, you know, you see these guys coming back to their club.
Yeah, back to club level.
That's where we want to hit. Like, you guys were the first.
Yeah.
I reckon the pioneers of, like, having us launch our own dreams. And
Well, that's because of your age, right? So the guys before us did really well as well.
Yeah, in Portugal 1991.
Yeah, so Portugal and even the Olympic Games, Barcelona, and then
correct.
Atlanta we did okay, but those boys were part of that golden era.
Yeah, but physically being able to go to the stadiums and watching
and being old enough to remember.
Right? Exactly right, how was that? How was that for you? Like, how?
Oh, look, very hard to sort of explain it.
Yeah.
But it was amazing. Just that opening ceremony, just goosebumps. Like, even now, when it's funny because every time any sport played the national anthem, the Australian national anthem, I just go stiff and I just sit there. And my wife looks at me and she knows that I'm living the moment because I understand what they're feeling, I understand what it feels like. And I remember at stages when it was happening, I'm thinking, I don't want this to end. I want to feel this forever.
The whole high.
Yeah. It's just like the adrenaline. And you know, you for me, I played at a different level, right? Some players at that stage sort of struggle.
Yeah.
Like, it's too much for them. And some excel at international level.
Yeah.
For me, I excelled.
Yeah,
my best football was playing for the national teams in the Olympics, and it just lifted me. But that was the best times. But yeah, I got the player of the match for the opening ceremony, which I saw my mum crying after the game. So it was just amazing time. And he was in Australia, like you said, we felt like rock stars.
We really did, and
we had to be. And Les Schoeffler, the boss, was on top of us to make sure that we didn't get carried away. He was pretty tough on us. I remember, and I learned those things, right?
Yeah,
you know, how to manage, you know, kids that are getting too ahead of themselves. Even my young man, to make sure that I keep him level headed, all that sort of stuff, that experience. But yeah, we were all good mates.
Even to this day,
I talk to most of them, if not all of them.
Yep.
And we have a good laugh every time because we obviously had a lot of stories with all the travelling we did.
Yeah, that would have been.
Even that you see on Facebook these days, some of the old photos, like your mullet that you had.
That's famous now. I've got number one in mullet. Even Ryan Grant reckons I've got the best mullet.
That's it, eh?
It goes a long
way.
There was
a few of them that Carboni had one.
Yeah, we had Jimmy Sikinis.
Jimmy Sikinis is a cousin, no?
No, we're not related. Apparently, maybe distant. Relation.
No,
and the real old school Aussie jerseys back then.
Oh yeah, that was awesome. But that tournament was
come on,
they were tough.
The listeners are gonna love hearing stuff like that because that tournament was that was an unbelievable tournament.
Yeah, it was good.
It was such a good tournament.
And we did well, right? Because we did well, we got to the semi final against Brazil.
Correct.
And that, I don't know if you know this story, but it was nil all. Just before half time, I kicked one of their midfielders and about 3-4 minutes later, they just gang up on me and smashed me, and they corked me hard on my on my right thigh. It was the most painful thing ever. Right, gone at half time, I was dead. I was dying. Anyway, they're working on me. You got to go on. You got to go on. I've gone on in the first 5 minutes. I was going bang. They got me in the same spot.
Oh no.
Yeah, you wouldn't read about it, right? So I copped in the same spot and that was the end of me. I was going to throw up.
Really?
Yeah, and I come off and we've made the sub, and about five, I remember, you know, ice and sitting down, and about 5-7 minutes later, we caught the first one.
Oh, no.
And then we caught the second one, and that was the end of it. And that's one of those moments that I thought, Jesus, you know, why?
Why,
we were doing well, and not because it was me, because when you're doing okay and you're in a game, if anything changes, doesn't matter where, sometimes that's enough to sort of tilt the advantage. And Brazil were a good side. I don't know if we would have beaten them, but we were still in the game.
Oh, but you've got to be ruthless. Hey, winners are ruthless in general.
Yeah.
Anything that you've won, I guarantee you've been ruthless. And
you
that's
have
what
to
they
be.
Did. And you were...
You have to be.
You're playing...
You can't be nice.
Swinger.
Sorry?
You were in the centre of the park as well.
I was in the centre of the park.
So there was traffic coming from everywhere.
Yeah.
So they could have hit you five times.
I hit one guy and then I just... And they got me back.
And that's the...
as simple as that.
But, and that's the different... And that's the different level again, right? And you just said you excelled at that. So it's international football, right?
Yeah.
They're not going to let anything die either.
No.
They're going to try and win.
No, that's right.
As much as you want it.
Yeah, that's right. And you're up against Brazilians, right? I mean, I remember travelling one day pre the tournament. We had some travelling and played some competitions. We went to Chile, playing this... against Colo Colo, I think it was, played on this dirt patch, and they were spitting on us before, right?
Wow.
And I'm thinking, what's going on here, right? We were just kids. We didn't know. And we did a few of those trips where we learnt that, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I remember in Venezuela, we come up against Uruguay, and they tried to man up to us, and we win them.
Like, did you?
Yeah. I remember Musket and me and Craig Moore and all these boys. We didn't hold back.
Yeah.
I think... That's the part of international football we learned when we travelled.
Yeah.
Right? We knew we could match it. But physically, mentally, and all that sort of stuff, if you couldn't sort of... If you back down on that, then you're
And they're going to find a weakness.
They're going to find a weakness. And you'll probably hear, you know... I know, you know, a lot of the other guys who played in the full national team and they've travelled, they would have given you that sort of example, how daunting it is in the World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah, the Uruguay, we talked about that.
Yeah, the second time round, they didn't faze them.
Yeah.
You know, and you see the documentaries of it, but it's spot on, right? And I think these days, and we'll talk, you know, our youth football, they're not competing as well.
Yeah, we're going to get...
You know, you're playing against Thailand, we're not competing. Because we're not mentally strong enough and we're intimidated by minnows, as far as I'm concerned, compared to us and where we've been and where we got to, I think that we struggle because we're too nice.
Yeah. All right, let's take it there then. We want to get your opinion. You know, you're coaching in the NPL in New South Wales and obviously coaching at a big club. Like, give us your opinion on the state of the game, because we know that you lost a striker at the start of this season.
Mm-hmm.
So you did pre-season with Charles and then he got taken by Wellington.
Yep.
Do you have an opinion on the state of the game at the moment, whether it's youth or whether it's senior football?
Look, with Charles, he was always going to go. We knew he wanted to go. He was trialing in the pre-season with Wellington. They decided not to take him at that time. We thought, okay, we've got him now. We want to be a platform for him to then go back to scoring goals, doing well, and then get him back in there, right?
Yep.
So it happened before we could sort of utilise him for our own benefit, right? Sort of. So he's gone there, no problem. We're never going to stand in his way, and I'm happy for him. Hopefully he plays more. I think... You know, if he can play
he
more,
it.
I think he can show people what he's got. If he gets given a better opportunity, he hasn't had much opportunity at the moment, but that's the way it is. I think the NPL has got a place for our development because that's pretty much the second tier, right?
Yeah.
And this is where kids can get given an opportunity. And I'm doing everything I can. I know we won't hold back any kids. I mean, we had, you know, players like my son go to Central Coast, Lucky Sepping recently goes, there's a couple of boys that went overseas. We've been doing that. All of a sudden, because we've been doing that, boys that have been sort of in the system and then been thrown out are coming to us to sort of rekindle themselves to get back in there. So we have a purpose for that. Even though it's a tough one because I'm supposed to win games at the same time, want me to develop. You can have both. You just got to manage it and balance it and make sure, you know, you get the results but still developing kids.
Yeah.
Right?
Now, is there an incentive for doing that? Like,
well, that's the issue, right?
You know?
And there's plenty of discussions in regards to, you know, transfer fees and how that's going to work. I know that there's discussions in that. Now, there's got to be an economy, right?
It has to be.
A football economy.
Yeah, of some sort of, you know, so yeah, if it's 5, 10, 15, something happens, you can turn it over and it there's an economy happening and it can grow, right? At the moment, the only chance we've got of making money is signing a player on a pro and then he goes overseas and then something happens.
Yeah.
But how many times do they call us and say, please, can you save free transfer, otherwise I can't go? And
because
it won't happen.
Yeah, right? You don't get it anyway.
They don't want to throw 50 grand on
Do you know what I mean? So,
your player.
So my question is, why should Marconi spend all this money in infrastructure, in coaches, in developing kids, right? I know they pay, and that's got to change. They pay to be there, service. Yeah. Where's incentive for us to develop kids? There is no incentive. Like, we lost 10, 12 players to the A-League in the youth level.
Yeah.
Right? Then we have to replenish them and restart them. So we're actually... we're obviously doing something right because they're getting the players from us.
Well, someone buys a German club comes in and takes,
for example, there's talk about that Qual from...
Qual, yeah.
Sorry, I can't.
That's right. Okay. He's my adopted son, by the way.
Yeah. He goes, Mariners get a fee, correct?
They have to. Yeah, because he's a pro. A pro. Right? He's recently signed pro.
Okay.
Right.
But, like, for example, okay, but then you guys produce a player. They use your club as a stepping stone. You guys don't get nothing. You know what I mean? Like, there needs to be compensation filtered down through the game.
Well, the issue with overseas clubs will not sign a player from the NPL.
Yeah, because they're like, well,
and they won't pay for it. It's got to be top tier, right?
Yeah.
So there's tiers, and because we fall under that tier, we can't.
Look, they cash in on it. As such.
Are they allowed to buy a player from the NPL?
They can, but.
See, that's
there's certain criteria that they won't go through. I can't go into. I mean, I'm not 100%. I'm not an agent, right? Probably good to get an agent and explain all that. But all I know is that clubs need an incentive to develop or even to be in a competition. I mean, what's the point of spending $500,000 to $1 million?
Yeah,
that's I'm talking everything.
Yeah.
To win 50,000.
Yeah, that's it.
It makes no sense. Most of these clubs are run by individual pockets and people who love, see it as a hobby.
The love of the game.
Well, ego, hobby, whatever you want to call it, right? Marconi, luckily enough, have got a club to back it.
Yeah.
But that football bleeds the club, let's be honest.
Oh, it does.
That doesn't make the club money. It actually bleeds the club. But they do it because it's part of their history.
Heritage.
And they love it and it's... You know, it's the same thing as an individual putting it out of his pocket. And saying,
yeah, that's it. Now, we asked Flea this similar question. You guys have been obviously coaching together for a long time, growing up in the game. Have you seen? Is it getting harder now to coach the youth of today? Whether or not it's in keeping them engaged through training, knowing that their phones are always on 24/7. And look, we've seen some obviously stuff with mental health over the time. Are you finding it harder to win, not necessarily engage them all, but just keeping them ready to go?
Modern day footballer.
Yeah.
So society's changed, right?
Yeah.
You've got coloured football boots, you know.
Imagine wearing them in 93.
It wouldn't have been a cork.
That's what I'm saying. So,
Husky would have come after you.
You've got to evolve, right? Yeah. You've got to evolve. You understand it. I've got kids too, right?
So yeah.
I understand it. I understand what's happened. But in saying that, I still come from the old school. And the way I see it is, if you want to play in this environment, these are the expectations. And there's some that there's not negotiables, you know, certain ways, you know. I'm not too fussed about people expressing themselves. Coloured boots now, that's all they sell. You can't do much about it. You know, you've got earrings, tats, all the rest of it.
You can't find a black pair.
No problem. But yeah, you can't. I've got a few. I tried to give my son my World Cups and they had a laugh at him.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, and he goes, no way. Anyway, so I still got them. You can still have old school about it and be strict. And unfortunately, it's a test and some can't handle it. And the ones that do are the ones that stay.
Yeah.
That's the way I look at it.
That's a fair call.
Because how I do things and what I want, my expectations and where I want to go. And I'm testing them because overseas, and you probably know, overseas is still pretty old school.
Mm.
You can't go there and do what you want. So if I don't I'm not doing the right thing by these players. If I don't prepare them as best I can in the environment I can, as professional as I can, to get them ready, so when they do go overseas, it's not a shock. Yeah. Because they won't get away with most things that they do here, right? And I look at it as a lot of these kids want to be pros, right? That's why they're here. And that's why I want them here. That's why I attract those kids, because they want to be pros. So if you want to be a pro, listen to me. Yeah. Take my advice.
Yeah.
It's going to be your ups. You're going to be your downs. This is what you need to do. And, you know, when a player says to me, oh, why, or come in and says, why not playing? I'll just throw the question back. I said, have you done everything you can in everything you can to be a better player? Answer the question.
Honestly, they'll probably come back.
Well, they answer their own question.
Yeah, they've answered it. Yeah.
So I said, when you do, come back to me. But I promise you, if you do, we won't have this conversation because you'll be playing.
Yeah.
So it's simple as that.
Yeah. And then, so we'll move into that then. Obviously, Damien's in the Central Coast setup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he signed as a youth player in the NPL under Nick Montgomery. He's had a stint with the A-League training. He played some preseason games. He also sat on the bench for the first game of the season. Looked like he was kind of come on, and then there was an injury, The team was winning, and he's probably one more that they'd probably use if they needed to get a goal or chase the game. That type of player. Didn't get on. He went back to the NPL. Three games in, or four games now, scored seven goals.
Yeah, he's banging goals in.
Banging goals. He's playing well. He's confident. He's doing really well. He's enjoying himself. He's living away from home. Not paying. He's getting paid $100, whatever he's getting paid. Daddy pays all the expenses. My investment. It's either football or university. I mean, they both cost
100%.
So I'm backing him. I told him, don't worry about anything. If that's what you want to do, I'll back you.
Yeah.
Right. And the good thing about him is, when he left school year 10, he wasn't sure what was happening. There wasn't much going on. That's when he played for me. I said, you got to work. So he did his plumbing. Finished that TAFE. He did the TAFE course.
Yeah.
And then he said, Dad, I want to play football. The opportunity came with the Mariners. And I said, mate, if you make it, you tell me what you'll do. He made it. He goes, I want to do this. I said, no problem.
Yeah, good. Go,
as long as you're not a bludger. And you're doing. So he's done it the other way. He knows what it means, digging holes, right?
Yeah.
Where some players don't know what digging holes are.
That's what you want.
Right?
That's what you want. You want that hard graph at all.
So he understands. So
he probably understood what he missed too, right? Digging holes.
Yeah, he's thinking, well, if I don't do this, it's not mad plumbing, shitload of money, but
he's still digging holes.
Yeah,
right?
But he understands that. And he's slowly getting there. He's getting bigger. He's stronger. I see his focus, because I told him, if you don't want this at any time, you just tell me, we'll pull the pin.
Yeah.
There's no expectation from me.
Yeah, good.
Right? At any time, don't worry, you know. It's either university or this, so that you take your pick, and you ain't going to university. So
he's football crazy. I remember playing at Bankstown. He would have been a 5-6-year-old. Try and get the ball away from him, mate. Always under the arm.
All three of them used to come to the game when they were playing. They were still young, and Flea still looks at them and can't believe it.
So I bet he can't.
They've grown up. So he's the middle one, and that's the path he's taken, and he's enjoying it, and he's fitter and stronger. And I see that he wants it. I got no problem with it. I'll back him, and until that time where he doesn't want to do it, I'm not one of those pushy parents.
Good.
I'm there to support.
You enjoy watching him play, but
I enjoy it. It's better player than I ever was. I never scored goals.
He's a pain in the ass for defenders, isn't he?
Yeah, he's on the borderline of over the top.
Like he's an attacker that defends. You'd love to have him in your team, mate.
Yeah. He's improved, to be honest. Since he's been in Central Coast, he's improved that defensive side of things, right? Because you're expected to run, right? You can't sever. You know,
you can't.
You can't just bang in goals and not run.
No, you got to work your ass. You do.
And A-League coaches will not pick players that are lazy. They don't care how many goals you score, and that's fair, right? Yep. In today's game, you've got to be able to do that defensive work and bang in the goals.
Yeah.
Right. If you can do that, you've got a chance. And you know, he had a sniff of maybe getting into the squad on Tuesday against the Wanderers, but he didn't. But you know, he's
thereabouts.
He wants it. He believes he should be playing, and that's a first.
That's a first.
And he can visualise himself playing and scoring on his debut. So when that comes, hopefully, sooner rather than later, then it happens for him.
How old is he now, Seth?
19, turning 20. Yeah.
Wow. Do you find it hard to turn your coach's hat off? Watching him play.
Yeah.
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 Like as analysing.
Sometimes, but I also understand that. as a coach, when you have the critics,
right? Yeah, so you're
I also understand that, hey, I don't know the full, all the information about every decision made.
Yeah.
So I never criticise. I don't like criticising coaches. I never do that because I know there's things and things I'm not privy to.
There's things in that decisions. Happen during the week behind
there's things doors. That happen. Yeah. So whenever there's feedback that comes for Damo, whatever, I'm onto him. I say, mate, what are you doing? You know, he's sort of been touted for being this aggressive, over the top, maybe too much troublemaker, all that sort of stuff. It's more that he wants to win. He throws his body on the line. He's one of those Berisha, right?
Yeah,
I'd have him in my team every day of the week. Yeah, he's a troublemaker, right? He causes problems. He causes chaos.
Gets defenders under
his skin. he gets under their skin. People love to hate him, right? And that's him. You know? People love to hate him. But he's off the park. He's a lovely kid. He's got a heart of gold. He's probably more fragile than people think he is. But he's when he crosses that line, he's another beast. And that I want that. I like that. And I encourage that, to be honest. But he's got to
find that balance.
He's got to find that and channel it in the right area.
But we hope all in good time, though.
Yeah, he's 19, right?
If he's got your mentality.
That's what I said to him. If he can adopt my mentality and have his mum's ability, because his mum was a footballer. I don't know if you know that, if you did your homework. Yeah. But she could score goals when she was younger. She played for the Australian girls team. But I think he's getting that because he had a hard time a few times. Even at Marconi, he had a hard, you know, from 18s, he thought he should be playing 20s. I said, mate, this is what you need to do.
Yeah.
He did it. And then he played 20s. I said, this is what you need to do. And he played first. This is what you need
to do. Ticked all the boxes.
And then he went to NYL. Didn't play for a while. This is what you need to do. Then even Monty, you know, I speak to Monty and he even said, I wasn't a big fan of him. I wasn't sure if he was going to crack it because I didn't know if he had it mentally.
Yeah.
But he's now,
he loves that style of play.
But he likes him because he's adopted that and he's improved and matured and built on what, you know, and followed instructions. And now he's understanding that things are going to get tough.
Yeah.
It's not going to always go your way. Mm. You don't drop your bundle because this is what can happen. Because I told him, look where you were 12 months ago, 18 months ago. You're playing under 18s, Marconi, and now you're on the bench.
Central Coast Mariners.
For Central Coast Mariners, mate. Have a look. Appreciate where you have got to.
It's a fast timeline, eh?
Correct.
It's so
it happens so fast. But you have to. You also have to appreciate where you got to, so then you can appreciate where you want to go to.
Yeah.
Because if you start, you know, I should look at that player, he's getting there. Nah. Everyone's got a different timeline in their journey.
Yeah.
He might be...
He's overtaken a lot of players since he was 13 until he is now, and I named them for him.
Yeah.
So my job for me is not to tell him how to play, not to tell him tactically or whatever. Mine is mentally to keep him switched on and focused and not to lose, you know, and prove him wrong.
Yeah.
I tell players, if you think you should be playing, prove me wrong.
100%.
Yeah.
That's the best motivation, that.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to finish with Fast Five with Seca, but... before we get there, you played and coached Seva, right? Played with him?
Yep.
Yeah, and then coached him? Well, play coach?
Yeah, short period. Short period. To Olympic.
Yeah, that was just...
passing by.
Passing by. And I had the deal on the Gold Coast ready to go, and I didn't want to stay where I was. There was something happening behind
me.
And I said, listen...
I remember.
I could be here till the end of the season. I don't know.
Still coaching.
Yeah. Oh, but coach, he coached me as a coach.
Yeah.
How was he?
And I think Flea, because I heard a bit of the podcast, Flea was mentioning that his left foot when he came to training. He came to training and the boys told me there's this player, blah, blah, bring him over. And he started hitting these balls and I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, we're going to sign this kid. And then Seva wanted more money, but I said, Seva, come on, mate. You gotta prove yourself. Once you prove yourself, right? Once you prove yourself, I'll give you that money.
You know why I said that? Because double wage.
I spent it all. he was good and he backed himself. He was a cocky little boy, cocky kid, but he backed himself and I liked that. And he was a fantastic footballer. I mean, he'd put Rob Molesky on a... You know, knock out these diagonal balls. And people talk about these long balls, diagonal balls. If Seva could hit a ball, you know, Seva could hit a ball and land on your toe.
Yeah, yeah.
And win games, you know, free. Just, you know, at any time that that he could score a goal and win you the game, and he did. He did against Flea when Pete went to Sydney United.
Remember that day?
I don't know. Did you bring this up?
I don't think he brought
Flea
this
actually,
up. Did
he? Flea actually left for me for a short period.
Yeah, right.
He wanted to give it a crack. He goes, Sydney United gave him an opportunity. I said, Pete, with all my blessings, no problem. He was honest, no problem. He went there for a few games, but he came up against us. And Sever had just copped back from
overseas.
I remember this and day. And I signed it. Day. It was so hot this day.
Yeah, Flea tried to pinch him, but I ended up getting him back. And the Bonnerick story, that's another one. but he's come back and I said, Sever, you're going to start off the bench. And he was okay with it.
I was actually good with it. I actually said, you know what? It's hot out there.
Fair call.
Don't worry.
not the interest turned up. So he sat on the bench and the game was in the balance, I think.
It worked out well, the game.
And then Flea's watching and I go, Sever, on you get. And Flea's now sweating. he lines the ball up. He just goes, ping. He pinged the top corner. And I think we won like 4-0 or something. Something ridiculous.
That game.
Yeah. So Sever just changed the game and killed him. And Flea's just...
then he came back to us.
Yeah, then things didn't pan out, and he came back to us, and we continued on. But yeah, that was one story. But I'll go into the story about Sever. His work rate wasn't the best, right? Your work rate wasn't the best.
There's the thing; it didn't need to be.
Oh, come on, Sever. No, you're right. You're right.
It didn't need to be.
No, you're right. But I'll give you a story.
But in saying it, you go to Europe and you work your ass off.
Yeah.
When I first went there, I was literally running past my fellow strike mate and trying to take down. I was a very good long distance runner as a
look,
kid.
The way I look at it is you don't have to, you run smart. Or if you can do what you could do with the ball, I'd tell you don't have to run right?
Yeah.
That's the reality. If you couldn't do what you did with the ball and you did bugger all defensively, then I got a problem. So, and I got permission from this player to name his name. So, because I have to tell this story, right? Yeah. So we're playing this game. I can't remember which game. It's I don't know. It was in the balance, and Sever's blowing a gasket, right? He's blowing a gasket, and Shane Webb runs to the sideline, and I think I was on the sideline. He's saying, "You've got to get him off. He's killing me. He's killing me."
Webby was saying, "What is this?
He's killing me." Okay, Webby. Please be patient. Anyway, about 5 minutes later, I can't remember which game it was. He did it a few times. I think maybe Wollongong, I can't remember. We got this free kick, and I knew, and this is what I'm saying. As a coach, you get a feeling, right? And you think, I can't just, everyone's saying, take him off. And this goes for any player. Take him off. You get a feeling that this player can maybe change the game. You don't take players like that off.
Yeah.
At these moments, right? So I kept him on, and he's picked his ball up and he's pinged it and he's won the game. Win bonuses at Webby's, yeah. He's winning. And I pulled Webby aside. I go, see? I go, you got the win bonus.
Yeah.
So that was the story with Ed Webber. I told him I'm going to say it. But,
cheers, Webby.
But that sticks in my mind that, you know, there's players out there that you just sometimes don't take off. And I see in the A-League too. I'm watching. This is where I'm a bit critical because I'm thinking, this player can win you the game. You don't take him off. Leave him as long as you can, because the players you're bringing on, they might be runners, they might be good, whatever, but some of them just don't have that X factor to win your games from nothing.
Yeah.
Well done, Sever. You can blow a gasket, eh?
I'll give you the 100 after.
Please. Now, we're going to finish with Fast Five with Seca. All right. Give us best player you ever played with.
Oh, tough one.
Go right back.
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
You've played with a lot.
I'm going to say Branko Milosevic.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Branko Milosevic. Look, the reason I liked him is because even as a senior player, I mean, he played overseas, played at a high level. The guy was a genius with the ball, and he was such a good guy. He took the young boys under his wing and really, you know, so I respect him a lot for that.
Yeah.
And I think, I can just rattle him off. Great players, but he just sticks out.
Stood out
for me, yeah.
All right, best player you played against?
Remember Dunga?
Yeah, Carlos Dunga, Brazilian.
Yeah, we're talking about him.
The captain.
Captain, 94 World Cup.
Yeah, so he came with an Asian team. I'll tell you this story. He's probably...
The Asian team was...
one of the Shanghai teams, I think.
Not AS Flugels. Yeah, it was
AS
Flugels.
No. Yeah. I can't remember. You might be able to search that up. I can't remember. We're playing, I think, with a... I think maybe the national team. We're having a game, and I'm thinking, this is Dunga, my chance, right? Playing in the midfield. And I'm thinking, I'm going to kick this guy, right? And I'm chasing him around. It was solid.
It's solid.
Kicking around. He's passing the ball around. I'm thinking, here I go. And I lined him up. And I went so hard, I wanted to kill him, right? Because that's what I did, right? And I kicked the ground. I kicked the ground. I'm out for 6 weeks.
Really? Is that where the nickname Bobcat come from?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, tipper truck. Yeah. And I just remember, I thought, you know what?
So you missed him.
I missed him.
Did you?
And he looked at me and he just shook his head.
Who's this bloke?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, who's this bloke? I'm like, I'm going to put this guy, you know, in the grandstand.
Next week.
And I did myself. And I learned a lesson, right? I learned a lesson that, you know, you can't just kick bikes.
Respect.
You got to respect guys. But he was a great player.
He was good,
Oh, he was good. And he was at that peak of his career, you know, playing in Asia. But he could play.
But didn't football. He just win the World Cup and went to Asia? He was at the top of his...
Yeah, he was top of his game. But he was older back then. He was at the highlight of his career, right? The end of his career. But he was, you know, and I'll tell you another player that you know, Paul Cimboli, I could never get to him. Right. I could never catch him. Anything he did, and he didn't look like much, and I thought, oh, you know.
I'll get him.
But I couldn't get him.
Why was he so good?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Just timing, smart.
He wasn't the biggest bloke, but good in the air too.
He was just a good player.
Good team around him as well. But
good player. Just couldn't get next to him. You know when you just can't get next to someone?
And you're trying everything.
And you tried everything. Yeah. And you just couldn't get to him.
I remember they used to visit
what a player.
Only back in the day.
What a player.
5-10 minutes. Yeah. You give him the opportunity. He doesn't need 5 chances.
No.
He's like needs one. Punch,
right? But they had a good side too, man.
Yeah. Well, I was going to lead into funniest thing you've ever seen on the football pitch, but you're going to laugh at yourself. Laugh at the bobcat then. No, we've gone funniest thing you've ever seen on a football pitch.
Well, that's pretty funny.
That's the best.
It wasn't
that's good.
You've taken 2 questions out of me already.
Even heard of a story.
Just something funny.
I don't know.
That comes close, by the way, that one.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Looking back on it, that's the funniest thing.
Lining
someone, Dunga, and just doing yourself for 6 weeks.
You're kicking the crap.
That's the donkey show right there. For life.
Wow.
Not many people know that story. So.
Where was it?
Oh, I can't remember.
Was it here?
I think it was at...
Because they toured here.
Yeah, they toured here. So I might look back and I can't remember which pitch it was.
We'll search that up and try and send it to you. All right, cool. Now I've got here, favourite team you've coached, whether it's start, just throughout.
Like if there was a certain team that you coached and you just... Or you
yeah,
just
I think I've got to say, look, I'm... Teams, after time, you realise they're your favourite, right? Yeah. Not in the moment.
Yep.
So it's hard to say, you know, it's like any team, like when they're winning now, they're not great until 10 years' time when you reflect
that's
on
right.
it.
Yep. That's right, yeah.
So that Bankstown team that was my first sort of experience as a coach, as a player, whatever, we played some really good football. We were aggressive. We won everything. People were afraid to come to Jensen Park.
Yeah.
I'll tell you another story. I know we haven't got time, but
no.
But we played a semi final or a grand final. I can't remember. I think it was a grand final. I don't know if you were there, Seva. You might have been.
Which one's that?
The one. Yeah, you were there. It was at Parramatta Stadium,
Big Spinery,
where the change room was massive.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
We cut it in the quarter.
Yeah, so I'm looking at this change room, right? We're used to Jensen Park, this
small little rabbit hole,
right? So I'm thinking, I'm looking probably at this. And all the players are too far away from us. I'm not comfortable with this, right? I said, all right, and I got Flea and a couple of other guys. I said, look, let's cut this change room into a small area like we're used to, right? And we're in this massive change room and all cuddling. And we're having our team tools. And I was looking, I was saying, I want this because this is what we're used
to. Home.
We end up winning that comfortably. Yeah. So that team there. That team there was resilient, tough, strong.
Everything you want as a coach.
And I never went into a game thinking we're going to lose.
Yeah, okay.
It's incredible.
We used to have bets, between how many we're going to score today.
It's incredible.
Yeah, okay. Just confidence, right?
Yeah, cocky confidence, but delivered.
Yeah.
The crowds at Jensen were Mate, that was the best. Yeah. They were unbelievable. Playing in front of like 3,000 or 4,000.
We even beat A-League teams on friendly games when we
pre-season game, no one wanted to play us. Yeah, it's not that type of game. We don't want that type.
Yeah, we were known as being tough, right?
Yeah.
We didn't hold back. We were.
Yous were, I wasn't.
No. But we had those players that could play. So we had a good balance, right? We had guys who could kick and guys who could score goals.
They used to take the piss because everyone's running around with a V8. I had my little lawnmower engine.
It worked.
That's all you need. It's
effective.
That's all you need. All right, now we'll finish with this because worst excuse to get out of training.
Pick a player. Name him. Name a shame.
You can name him, Shane. It's got to be Webby.
It's my grandmother's funeral, but he used that twice.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Do you want to name it?
Yeah, no.
Jerry Kalouris.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Really?
Wow.
At the end of the year, I had a list of all these excuses. And he wondered why he didn't play the grand final, but I come up with all the excuses of... And that some of them were exactly the same, and his grandmother died twice and all that sort of stuff. It was just ridiculous. It was just ridiculous. It was beyond ridiculous.
How good.
There you go, mate. You have it.
I love that.
What's the worst one you've had?
I get some awful... what did I have the other... Mate, I get some awful excuses. Always working back.
What about I just don't feel like it?
Yeah, I'd rather just be told I couldn't be bothered, eh?
Well, that's what I tell my players.
I'd rather be told that.
You know, I tell my players, I can't control if you go out before the game or not. I'm going to judge you on your performance.
I had one. Sorry, a train broke down. At 3:30 in the afternoon. Train broke down at 3:30 in the afternoon. Fair dinkum, mate. Just tell me you don't want to come.
Yeah.
3:30.
I prefer honesty.
Yeah.
I prefer honesty. And I had a trialist not long ago that tells me that, you know, he'd had to go to a funeral. And I heard that he had someone passed away, which is fine. And then I find out he's playing for his current club because he was playing against my son's team.
Oh, stop it.
Small world.
Mate, you can't lie. You can't lie.
Anyway, but, you know, players don't realise that clubs talk to each other.
Yeah.
Especially when they're going for contracts. All that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Well, Saka, mate, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
It's been a great chat. A good insight into Sever as well. And it was, I know you were looking forward to this one as well.
We go way back.
Way back. So
15 years now.
Saka, thanks, mate.
My pleasure.
Good luck moving forward with Marconi for the rest of the season.
Thanks for having me.
Sever, a brilliant chat with Saka.
Yeah, it was brilliant. He's a good mate of ours, good mate of the podcast now, and he's brilliant as always. Took us way back.
Fantastic. Now, this podcast can't happen without our good sponsors, so we can't thank Mate. Get in contact with Mate, www.letsbemates.com.au for all your NBN and phone needs. Rusty Penny Brewing, who are keeping us hydrated on the podcast. Get the guys on socials, get down there and have a beer with the boys. They're really good. So, boys, thank you very much. MG Active, keeping Sever in shape. Looking good, Sever. Well done. The Planning Station, go and follow The Planning Station on all socials. Maeve will help you out with whatever you need for your party needs or anything like that. DS Tipping and Excavations.
Still the best lane in Penrith.
Still the best lane, Penrith. He's running around with that. So for all your tipping and excavation needs, get in contact with Daniel Severino. Little Paper Boat Supply Company, Matty Clark, obviously did our logo. It's getting cold, so he's also doing some beanies and all that sort of stuff. So get in contact with him. He'll help you out. Tell him Hedo and Sever sent you. Ignify Legal, Ian. Buying or selling your property, need expert legal advice? Call Ian on 8823-3309. And follow him on socials and he'll be able to help you out. And Jeff Lambert. Jeff keeps us looking good each week. So if you need any videography, live streaming or photography needs, get in contact with him. Find him on socials or visit jefflambert.com.au. Sever, thanks, pal. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
See you guys. Thanks for listening.